So good evening. For those of you on the other side of the continent, it's evening. For those of us on the California side of the continent, it's late afternoon, perhaps 4 o'clock. For those of you on other continents, a really warm welcome, warm welcome. As Inez said in the opening, the theme of this retreat is balance and stability. And we can find this idea of balance, we can practice balance in so many different ways, in obvious ways and subtle ways. And certainly during this retreat, we are working with a balance between sitting meditation and walking meditation, having the body be still and having the body move. I think all of us recognize that if we did nothing but sit for all these hours, yeah, we would all be having a different kind of experience. But if all we did was move, we also would be having a different kind of experience. So this balance between sitting and walking, maybe just an encouragement to do walking meditation, even if it is something that maybe you don't regularly do or haven't done in the past, just an encouragement to do some walking meditation because it does serve as a balance for the sitting. I also want to talk a little bit about a balanced way in which to listen to a Dharma talk. There can be a way, and sometimes there's a literal or a figurative leaning forward, like wanting to get something. And I like to get all the information and make sure we got it all straight and figured out and it's all clear and got to get it. It's very easy for us to do this, especially those of us who perhaps have had jobs or professions that really emphasized information processing or somehow working with information, organizing it in some way. So it's a natural way that we might approach this. And certainly it isn't easy to disengage from a mind that is used to picking and choosing and organizing, agreeing or disagreeing, or maybe it can feel uncomfortable. Like, what is there even another way to be? Encouragement here is to stay embodied. Allow the words to arrive. And perhaps letting some pass away, and with a trust that what needs to be known at this moment can be known. If you still don't feel comfortable, there, everything's being recorded. You can listen to them later, but just to notice that, is there a balance between meditation and listening? Can you stay embodied, stay present? Recently, I came across this delightful book that was published in 1896. And this book is called Bicycling for Ladies. So you can imagine what the world was like in 1896. And it's filled with, I'm getting a kick out of this book. It's filled with all kinds of information on how to ride a bike. Didn't really appreciate, but back in the late 1800s, a bicycle was really a novel thing, and they had special schools set up to teach people and people maybe were used to riding horseback or walking, but, you know, a bicycle. And they try to describe how to balance on a bicycle. It was, I read this, I know how to ride a bicycle, but I read that description, I had no idea. Maybe I should have excerpted a little here in my talk I don't have to share with you. But the point is that it's so different to read about something, to think about something. It's different than to actually do it, like to be embodied. And we all know this. I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know. But maybe we can, during this retreat, is learn to set aside the kind of like the active doing, figuring out mind. And learning to make a different kind of effort. So we're still alert and attentive, and we're not abandoning discernment. But this kind of discernment doesn't disturb tranquility. And the way in which that we can still stay balanced in the way that we engage with information or engage with speaking. And in some ways, we might even say this practice, this meditation practice, this walking the Buddhist path to greater and greater freedom. In some ways, we could say the practice is very simple. Just be aware and stay balanced. Sounds easy, right? Be aware and stay balanced. One way that we might think about this is there's a story in the suttas in the earliest literature, the Buddhist literature, where the Buddha is giving an example. He's teaching and he says, I'm paraphrasing here. Suppose there is a crowd of people that are watching a performance, and you're tasked with walking through the crowd toward the stage while everybody else is watching this performance, and while carrying a bowl of oil on your head. You're instructed to not drop, allow a drop of oil to spill from the bowl, and behind you is a person that has a sword who will cut off your head if you do spill a drop of oil. So the point I think that is trying to be made here is to walk in a way that has some uprightness and some steadiness, as well as really being aware of what's going on. You know, these people that are watching the performance, they're not paying attention to you. They're paying attention to the performance. So there's a way in which it might require us to be agile and flexible, to move out of the way of maybe some other people, or be able to maybe not walk in a straight line. Maybe we have to go right all the way around something. Or this way of to be aware and stay balanced. But is there a way that we can do this in this awareness in a relaxed way with some ease, so not with stiffness, and yet not be cavalier about it, not be casual about it? And this is another way in which to be balanced, is the way in which we are paying attention to the object of it, is that it's like we're rubbing a cloth on something that's maybe can be dusted. it's not that we have to really rub hard to get a stain out necessarily, but there does have to be some contact between the awareness and the object. And you can just check if there's a little bit too much tightness. Is it there as what your body and your mind do when the bell rings at the end of a meditation period? Is there a giant sense of relief, like, ah? Maybe you don't need to have so much tightness then. If there's a feeling of really white knuckling your way through the meditation periods. And the Buddha talked about this with the story of Sona, the lute player. And I'm imagining in my mind, a lute is like a proto-guitar, a stringed instrument. And Sona, he was a monk who was feeling discouraged with his practice and felt like giving up and disrobing and going back to the lay life. But before he became a monastic, he was a lute player. And the Buddha asked him, what was it like when you played and the strings were too tight? Did it sound good? And Sona said, no. And the Buddha asked, well, how about when they were too loose? Did it sound good then? And Sona responded, no. And the Buddha said, in the same way, tune your level of effort so that it's just right. I'm sure many of you have heard this story before. It's a common one. But might there be a way in which we can apply it to more and more of our experiences on meditation or in daily life? Is there a way that we can be aware and stay balanced? Maybe one more little story that I'll share from the early suttas. Perhaps many of you have heard this one as well. These are all common ones. Where this deva asks the Buddha, how, dear sir, did you cross the flood? And the Buddha responds, by not halting and by not straining, I crossed the flood. And the deva says, but how is it, dear sir, that by not halting and by not straining, you crossed the flood? And the Buddha replies, when I came to a standstill, I sink. And when I struggled, I got swept away. So again, pointing to being balanced doesn't mean that we're just stuck in one place, you know, firmly rooted, not having some flexibility. Coming to a standstill, I sink. The Buddha says. So it's this ability to be responsive to what's happening and what the environment is calling for. And knowing when to, maybe the string is a little bit loose or the string is a little bit tight. Maybe there could be some more engagement. Even I talked about like the mind and being embodied. Maybe there's times in which the mind needs to be more engaged, solve a problem, figure something out. But then part of the practice is to know when to put that down and when to be embodied. So to be aware and stay balanced, you can also stay balanced in what we are paying attention to. I've been talking about how you can do it in what we pay attention to. It's human nature to pay attention to things that are difficult. The pain in the knee, the heartbreak, the anxiety, the concern that I'm not sure if I know how to do this meditation thing. Am I doing this right? But we can be balanced on what we pay attention to also notice there's plenty of neutral experiences we're having, and perhaps even some positive experiences we're having. Feeling the pressure of the chair or cushion against the body. Maybe that's neutral. The sound of the traffic, maybe that's neutral. Maybe sounds of birds, maybe there's a little bit sense of that being pleasant. But can we notice and counteract this negativity bias that we all have and kind of complete the picture by seeing that there's, yes, there are uncomfortable, difficult things happening perhaps in this moment. And our awareness might collapse around that, and so that we feel like that's everything. But can we bring a little balance to the picture and notice, yeah, there's also neutral things happening. I can feel the material of the clothing against my skin. And there might even be some pleasant things happening. This feeling like, okay, I'm sitting in a retreat. I'm doing something, taking care of myself in this way. Maybe you had a pleasant meal that you prepared for yourself, or maybe somebody prepared for you and you have some gratitude for that. And also, can we be balanced in the way in the way that we think about balance? Can we consider balance in a balanced manner? That is, to not vilify when we're out of balance. When we notice that things don't feel quite right in the biosphere, I think it was called Biosphere 2 in the 1990s, and this in Arizona where the in the late 1990s in Arizona, this Biosphere 2, where the scientists created their own miniature world. Because it was about the size of 3 football fields, and they brought in forests, and lakes, and marshes, and deserts, and thousands of species of animals and insects, and like 8 humans. And they were going to recreate, maybe many of you remember this, they were going to recreate their own environment. The water would get purified and the atmosphere and all this. Well, one thing that they discovered is that the trees wouldn't grow straight and they wouldn't grow properly there in the biosphere. Some of you I shared this with during the practice discussion, because they discovered that actually it was being blown by the winds. It was the pressure of being blown by the winds that helped the tree to grow some resistance and the trees to grow strong. So it's natural for there to be some winds, some storms in human life and in the life of a tree. We don't want to vilify the sense that sometimes we're feeling the pressure, we're feeling the winds, and instead we think we should always be upright and completely steady. It's natural to be pushed around a little bit. And as what we discover as we practice is that the magnitude of being pushed around greatly diminishes, the duration of time greatly diminishes, and then maybe it's no longer a feeling I'm like moving my body back and forth to like showing what it's like, but maybe we that's a, oh, we just notice that it's a flicker in the mind, this being out of balance. And it's not until we're completely awakened that we have this complete stability all the time. But to support being balanced and to support our being able to weather the storms when they do arise, it's really helpful to notice when we're out of balance. Like, what are some of the indicators? What are some of the experiences that point to that we're feeling a little bit out of balance? One that maybe becomes a little more evident during a meditation retreat is our posture. So we're sitting, and there might be subtle ways in which we find ourselves leaning forward or leaning backwards, or maybe like turning away. So this can be literal or figurative. I know for myself, sometimes when if I'm lost in thought, especially early in my practice when I was doing a lot of planning, I didn't realize beginning of practice how much planning I was doing. I would find like my chin was going up and I was kind of like leaning forward. So just these subtle ways in which our body, our posture is, can also be an indicator of, oh yeah, the mind is a little bit out of balance here. There's a lot of planning happening or whatever it might be. So if we find ourselves leaning, it can be an indicator where we might look, where are we putting our attention? And why do we find that our mind fixates its attention on often what we want or what we don't want? And with mindfulness, we can examine this and look at this impulse, this preoccupation of what we want or what we don't want, and to be aware of our mental state, rather than allowing just this mental activity to continue unchecked. So desire, this wanting something in itself, is not inherently problematic. Of course, we have the desire to eat when there's hunger signals. We have the desire to take care of and protect our loved ones. We have a desire for the world to be a better place. And a lot about Buddhist practice is becoming aware of and distinguishing between the skillful and the unskillful desire. So practice isn't about getting rid of all of our desire. Although sometimes, I mean, I have heard Dharma talks that really emphasize getting rid of it. But I think we all acknowledge that there's healthy and skillful desire, or inspiration for practice, for example, is another one. But our mindfulness practice allows us to see that our definitions of what's skillful and unskillful changes. Skillful and unskillful desire changes as our understanding and our practice grows. But if we find ourselves filled with desire, either because our body is leaning, or maybe we're just have this preoccupation in the mind, one thing we might do is just to take a careful look at it. Are we seeing it in a balanced way? Are we seeing it accurately? Will it really fulfill all the expectations you're having? So we can take a careful look at the object. And then we can also take a careful look at the experience of desiring and how it feels in the mind and the body, and to feel that maybe a little bit of how it's a little bit uncomfortable, this constricted feeling. In the same way with aversion. Of course, aversion is the same thing as desire, the desire to not want something. And aversion may be mild, it may be strong, and of course there's some healthy forms of aversion. it might be really skillful to turn away from, if we're having some uncomfortable feelings in the body, and we know that we're not harming ourselves by sitting, just as Inez said earlier, it may be really skillful to turn and pay attention to something else, another experience that we're having. But aversion can also be the type of ill will that includes some hostility. So we might find ourselves a little bit out of balance with aversion. Can you just be with it without trying to experience it? Trying to fix it. Can you experience it without trying to fix it? So often we have aversion to aversion. So is there a way in which we can say, yeah, this is aversion and this is how it feels? For some people, it's helpful to do some metta practice. It doesn't have to be metta towards that which we currently have ill will. But just bringing to mind a lovable being and letting our hearts feel the warmth with that. Bring some balance into some of the aversion and ill will, and purposely, intentionally bring in, wherever is accessible and easy, some loving kindness. Some other ways in which we might support coming back into balance if we find that we're filled with aversion is just to imagine, if it's some ill will or hostility, imagine how you would feel if you acted it out. Some of the regret or some of the remorse that might arise. So part of the way we get out of balance is this really wanting or not wanting. But also, you might be noticing, of course, that there's another way in which we sometimes get out of balance, and that is with the energetics. That is, we might feel like there's too much energy. There's this restlessness, this feeling of being agitated or scattered. It's a more obvious way it shows up, but there might be a really subtle way also where the mind, yes, maybe it's on the breath, but it's quietly searching for something more interesting. Surely there's got to be something here that's juicier, a little bit more drama or something. So just to notice, there's such a wide range in which restlessness might show up. One way we might work with that is just to notice with a wide angle lens. To imagine maybe that you are in a big, beautiful cathedral. How it feels to be in places, some meditation halls also are like this too. You just walk in and there's a sense of, oh, a feeling of ease, of spaciousness. You might imagine, just bring to mind with the restlessness in this big, maybe sacred space that allows the restlessness to be there, but there's more room. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. Alternatively, we might use like a zoom lens. What is restlessness? Maybe just, where do you feel it in your body? Maybe it's a feeling and the legs want to get up and jump off the cushion, run away. Maybe it's a fluttering feeling. Or maybe it's the mind just bouncing around, not really settling. And also one way we can come back into balance if we find that we're really restless is to open our eyes, kind of like disrupt the flow of the thoughts. And then maybe I'll turn towards the opposite of restlessness. That is this drowsiness or this absence of vitality, this sluggishness or a dullness of mind or a sleepiness. can show up in obvious ways, like can barely stay awake. It can also show up in a more subtle way. That is, the mind and the body can start to settle. And then the mind can maybe land into this cottony, maybe feels cozy in some way, this a location where things aren't disturbing, but there's not any brightness, there's no joy, there's no vitality in the mind. We often call it like a sinking mind. Like it's sometimes can be confused with being settled and concentrated, but there's not any like agility or flexibility in the mind. Instead, it's just a real dullness. Or maybe another kind of subtle way in which there might be some torpor, I can use that word maybe, is this pattern of retreating from difficulties, from kind of like pulling back whenever there's maybe an uncomfortable experience either in the mind or in the body. This way of pulling back, instead of just arousing that little energy to what's required to meet the difficulty, to be with it. So one way that we might work with these different ways in which drowsiness or lack of energy might show up is to just do an inquiry about what might be underlying the sloth and torpor. One of the primary causes is not noticing that actually there's some discontent or some boredom, which is also a type of aversion. Sometimes it's just simply lack of sleep, needing some more sleep. Or maybe sometimes it's just we haven't acknowledged that, yeah, there really are some difficult emotions here that we're trying to ignore, so we keep turning away from, and we haven't really noticed or paid enough attention to them. So one way that we can work with us, come back into balance, is to, even though this sense of being tired and dull, even though that experience is diffuse and vague, we can still bring our mindfulness to it. We might be accustomed to thinking that all our objects of meditation should have like edges to them and should have a certain clarity. But even though tiredness and so many other experiences is vague and diffuse, maybe even foggy, we can bring our awareness to that. And this bringing our awareness is a way in which we can bring up our energy, as well as to bring our awareness with a sense of curiosity. What is this? How does it feel in the body? How does it feel in the mind? What is it like as the mind starts to maybe like drift, feel like it wants to fall asleep? It's fascinating. We can bring our mindfulness to this process of falling asleep. And sure, maybe you fall asleep. Maybe you kind of like do, you know, this type of movement while you're investigating. That's what happens. Then you just bring your mindfulness. Oh, okay, wow, what was that? So these are some of the ways it's very common for us to get a little bit of out of balance, either with kind of leaning forward or against, or maybe energetically too much energy, a feeling of not enough energy. But also this practice in the big picture of this practice, one key is to keep on this certain amount of perseverance with this, balancing the perseverance with the methodical routine practice of meditation, bringing the mind back to the breath again and again and again, coming to the cushion again and again and again. So there's this kind of routine part of the practice. And to balance that also with this inspiration, without losing sight of the goal of the practice, this greater freedom, awakening. Because if we are motivated or inspired or spurred to practice by these beautiful ideals, but somehow we aren't implementing them, aren't able to have the discipline to implement a regular practice, some of the routine, eventually we'll just find ourselves maybe floundering or in wishes, or maybe exhausting our energies and other pursuits that aren't going towards what we find the most inspiring. So this practice is also a balance of just kind of the mundane routine meditation, as well as the heartfelt inspiration and the beauty of wisdom and compassion, and recognizing that we need both in our practice to really support this. And as we practice, we gain more understandings, greater insights. But then we can have this stabilizing activity of, once we have insights or new understandings, such as this repetition of coming back to the practice, and maybe those insights show themselves again and again and again, and so that they get integrated into our life more and more. So this balance between having a vision, having an inspiration, and, dare I say, the mundane meditation practice, just coming back to the cushion, coming back to the breath. And usually all of us have preference for one or the other. Either we like routine or we like feeling inspired. And so this practice is not asking us to be somebody that we're not, but it is asking to stretch ourselves a little bit, to do something a little bit differently or beyond where we feel comfortable. Of course, right? If we want to have new understandings, new experiences, then we have to stretch a little bit. And maybe I'll end with this poem by a poet whom I appreciate very much. I won't say the poet's name right now. I don't want people to start Googling, trying to find it or something like this. But this poem is called Strange Balance. And it goes like this. When the boy is sneering, or the glass is breaking, or the woman is weeping, or the streets are crowded with anger and rage, it's hard to believe a small joy has any real value. Hard to believe a single red Gerber daisy or a cup of grapefruit-scented tea might have any relevance, could bear any weight on the scale that measures what it is to be alive. But last night, while I was steeping in worry, aching with injustice, my daughter created a stage between the threadbare couches and hummed herself a soundtrack as she leapt and spun and shuffled and flapped, and oh, how her brief flare of joy changed the flavor of the night. An improbable balance, the way even the smallest amount of sugar transforms the bitter sauce. The way just one note resolves a minor chord. The way the barest hint of rain makes the whole desert erupt into bloom. An improbable balance, the way even the smallest amount of sugar transforms the bitter sauce. The way just one note resolves a minor chord. The way the barest hint of rain makes the whole desert erupt into bloom. We might have this idea that coming back into balance is a big, complicated project. But there's a way in which just bringing mindfulness to the moment. There's a way in which just bringing mindfulness to the moment. And we've all been practicing. We know how the mindfulness in the moment just takes a little bit of effort, just takes remembering to do so. For those moments when there's some mindfulness, there's some balance there too in that mindfulness. We don't have to think that it's such a big project. We can just be mindful of being out of balance. And that way is a moment of balance. Maybe we'll just sit for 1 minute or so. So thank you. Thank you for your attention, and thank you for your practice.